Good afternoon. Thanks for coming and staying. And thanks to the Socialist Caucus for inviting me back. It's one of my favorite places to be in APHA. So today I'm going to talk about triclosan and the impacts, inequities, and regulatory failures associated with it. I have no relationships to disclose. So triclosan is a chemical that I feel disproportionately impacts children, teenage girls, and women. So I'm going to focus primarily on those pieces. There are a lot of implications for the environment, but I'm going to kind of just save that for another presentation, just so I can kind of focus in on how triclosan impacts a specific subset of the population. So triclosan is a chlorinated aromatic hydrocarbon used in consumer products for its antibacterial properties. It was created in the 1960s by SIBA Corporation, and at that point it was primarily used for surgical scrubs. So it had relatively high concentrations of the chemical, and surgeons had a much longer use time than consumers do today. So it was primarily limited to just the healthcare setting. But now, triclosan is in thousands of products. You can find triclosan, it's usually listed as the active ingredient on antibacterial hand soaps. It's in Colgate toothpaste, Colgate Total toothpaste. Some mouthwash, deodorant, lotions, cosmetics, including mascara and lip gloss. It's also in shaving cream, children's toys, baby changing stations. It used to be in cutting boards. I believe that's now been voluntarily removed by the company that was using triclosan in that product. It's also in footwear like Merrell shoes and Tevas to help prevent odor. And it's also in our pet supplies, so things like the refillable water and food dishes. And all of these products lead to huge sales for the manufacturers of triclosan. And mind you, the majority of these products are marketed as antibacterial chemicals that are going to provide the consumer a benefit. The benefit, they believe, is to prevent household or common illness. So triclosan presents, as I said, with health implications and also environmental. One of the main health implications that there's a solid amount of research on is bioaccumulation. So triclosan is now so ubiquitous that it can be found in our bodies, our waterways, and even in household dust. A particular concern is that fetuses are being exposed to triclosan in the womb via umbilical cord blood, and just after birth, infants exposed to contaminated milk. So just last year, the CDC reported that triclosan concentrations rose 41% between 2004 and 2006. So as of 2006, the U.S. population was using more triclosan than ever before. Another area of concern is the link between antibacterial use and antibiotic resistance. There's much concern that the overuse of antibacterials will select for bacteria that are resistant to them, and then also to cross-resistant to certain antibiotics. That's what creates especially virulent superbugs. I gave a presentation yesterday on the link between antibiotic resistance and triclosan in terms of animal agriculture as well. And one of the things that we find is that the triclosan that we use in our consumer products goes down the drain, isn't completely eliminated by the wastewater system, and then gets loaded into sludge that's then land applied for agricultural purposes. So there was a study that linked triclosan in sludge to uptake into soybeans from the root to the plant to the bean. So there are a lot of implications for our food system as well. But that's okay, because there was a study released this week by the American Cleaning Institute that says triclosan is totally safe. They conclude that triclosan and triclocarbon soaps do not facilitate antibiotic resistance, nor do they contribute to antibiotic cross resistance. So the American Cleaning Institute is the home of the U.S. cleaning products industry, the nonprofit trade association representing manufacturers of household, industrial, and institutional cleaning products. Their ingredients and finishing packages, and of those chemical distributors to the cleaning product industry include BASF, Clorox, Colgate-Palmolive, Dow Chemical, Microban, which is the trade name for triclosan, Procter & Gamble, and Unilever. So they're the folks that funded this study saying that triclosan and triclocarban are perfectly safe. As I mentioned, some of the environmental impacts are endocrine disruption. We've seen that triclosan has been shown to affect hormone-regulated physical development in the North American bullfrog. Specifically, tadpoles treated with low levels of triclosan showed overdevelopment of hind legs and decrease in total body weight. So we know that triclosan is also highly toxic to algae and some small fish species. So what we can assume is that environmentally, triclosan impacts, you know, the very lowest man on the totem pole and then accumulates up through the food web. So now I want to talk about the ways in which triclosan disproportionately affects women and children. This year, researchers published findings from a study using 2003-2006 NHANES data. Their research showed an association between triclosan concentrations and the likelihood of allergy diagnosis. So the connection between high levels of triclosan and the presence of allergies is still just a correlation, but the researchers involved in the study went on to explain that they believe that our over-cleanliness could lead to disruptions in our immune system and cause disease. This is what some people refer to as the hygiene hypothesis. In 2008, the Environmental Working Group did a small study of 20 teenage girls between 14 and 19, I believe, age 14 and 19. And the teens were recruited from locations across the U.S. representing diverse ethnic and cultural backgrounds. And they found that these teens used on average about 17 personal care products each day. And that led to an exposure of approximately 174 unique cosmetic ingredients. In contrast, women surveyed by the Environmental Working Group were found to have just use about 12 products each day, totaling 165 unique chemical ingredients or cosmetic ingredients. So with the teens in the study, they found that 100% of their 20 participants had measurable amounts of triclosan in their system, and that's higher than the CDC's NHANES data that says that about 78% of the U.S. population of girls between 14 and 19 have similar levels of triclosan. And emerging research is pointing to the fact that teens may be particularly sensitive to hormone-disrupting chemicals, given the complex hormone signals that guide the rapid growth and development of the reproductive system, the brain, the bones, the blood, and our immune systems. So in January 2011, the CDC published a report called Environmental Chemicals in Pregnant Women in the U.S., NHANES 2003-2004. And this is the first report to look specifically at the chemical burden experienced by pregnant women. And what they found was very troublesome. They looked for polychlorinated biphenols, polybrominated diphenyl ethyls, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, phthalates, phenols like triclosan, and perchlorate. And what they found was that triclosan was found at some of the highest median levels detected in pregnant women. And while chemical concentrations in pregnant women were typically similar or lower than in non-pregnant women, triclosan was the only standout. Triclosan and PBDEs were the only standout. So they were actually higher in pregnant women than in non-pregnant women. Just before the APHA conference last year, a research publication came out by James et al. And they published their research on triclosan's effects on estrogen. So what they discovered was that triclosan interferes with an enzyme that helps estrogen cross over the placenta to reach the growing fetus. So estrogen is vital for the baby's development and especially the growth of brain cells. So brain damage occurs when estrogen is unable to cross the placenta. So this has huge implications for developmental effects. This study was done in sheep. So sheep aren't that different than humans. So one could assume this is also potentially happening in the human population. And so there's all of these health impacts, and at the crux of it is that the chemical itself doesn't actually do what the manufacturers claim it will do. So there's no efficacy data that says washing your hands with triclosan will actually decrease your levels of everyday illness. In 1997, FDA reviewed effectiveness data on triclosan and Colgate Total toothpaste. To date, that's the only efficacy data that FDA has reviewed. It's a voluntary process, so that's the only application for which they received efficacy data. And it did prove effective in eliminating or combating gingivitis, but not all of us have gingivitis, and maybe we should think about that being prescribed if that's necessary. So there's a lot of loopholes that allow triclosan to remain on the market, even though there's all of these health impacts. Both EPA and FDA are responsible for regulating triclosan. And where triclosan acts to slow or stop growth of bacteria, fungi, or mildew, EPA regulates it under the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act. In 2008, EPA found that triclosan was eligible for re-registration despite overwhelming evidence of its impacts on human health and the environment. But EPA acknowledged that emerging science on triclosan's health impacts warranted another registration evaluation in 2013. That's 10 years before it should be re-evaluated. So the typical re-registration process takes, they wait 15 years in between re-registrations. So this one, they were concerned enough to speed it up by 10 years. For FDA, FDA regulates triclosan under the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. And under FFDCA, there are a series of monographs or rules that they use. And triclosan is covered under the over-the-counter antiseptic antimicrobial drug products monograph. This rule is 37 years old. It's never been finalized. The last time anyone at FDA really looked at the monograph or made public announcements about the monograph was in 1997. So 37 years old, not final. There's all of this evidence. Finally, in spring 2010, FDA said, well, we're going to do a year-long investigation of triclosan. And they said that that would come out in spring 2011. Well, it didn't come out. And that's one of the reasons I had, you know, put in my abstract. I wanted to be able to say, this is what FDA found after its year-long review. And they pushed it back to winter 2012. So we will see. Another thing I kind of want to talk about is, so with all those regulatory gaps, what can we do as consumers? So obviously avoiding antibacterial hand soaps and reading labels. Again, that's always the consumer's burden, is having to educate themselves. So there have been now 5 class action lawsuits made against Dial Corporation in the past year, claiming misbranding and adulteration, saying that triclosan added to these products causes human health impacts, that's the adulteration piece, and it's misbranded because it doesn't actually prevent household illness. That's a case that we made in our petitions to EPA and FDA as well. So Food and Water Watch has been active on this issue for going on 4 years now. And in partnership with Beyond Pesticides and about 78 other nonprofit, environmental, and consumer groups, we've submitted to petitions to both EPA and FDA. We'd like to see a ban on the non-medical uses of triclosan. Some of our other wins have been passing a phase-out resolution in municipal buildings in Highland Park, New Jersey, and getting over 10,000 activists to write to their members of Congress saying that they'd like to see a ban on triclosan. So another thing I always get this question is, well, what can I do as a consumer to avoid using triclosan? Because sometimes it's not clearly marked. If it makes the claim that it's antibacterial, it'll be listed as an active ingredient. If it doesn't make that claim, it might still be listed in the ingredients. And I don't know about you, but I've never read the ingredients on a mascara or a lip gloss, or for that matter, my triclosan-embedded gym pants. So there are a few places that you can go to learn some more information. Obviously, our website, which I'll show at the very end. This tool is very helpful for your personal care products. This is the Environmental Working Group Skin Deep database. You can go in and type in whatever chemical you're concerned about, or you can type in whatever product it is that you use, and it'll score it 1 to 10, 10 being the worst, 1 being the best. I highly recommend that. And in terms of further educating yourself and getting the word out to others about this needless exposure, the folks at Story of Stuff, who I'm sure many of you have seen, they went from just doing the Story of Stuff to doing many stories. And one of the ones that we worked with them with last year was the Story of Cosmetics. And it's a great piece that talks about all the different chemicals and the loopholes that exist so that something like fragrance can be in there. Fragrance might be 30, 40 individual chemicals, but they don't have to be labeled because they're listed as confidential business information. So they give people a little something to chew on. And so if you would like to learn more about our campaign and our work, please visit our website, foodandwaterwatch.org. We're also at the expo booth, 1007. Thank you.